Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Danny Postel, who is an Associate Director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Denver. His books include Reading Legitimate Crisis in Tehran, Iran and the Future of Liberation, and The People Reloaded, The Green Movement and the Struggle for Iran's Future. He blogs for Truthout, Critical Inquiry and The Huffington Post. And his new book, co-edited with Nada Hashemi, is The Syria Dilemma. He has an article at The Huffington Post, Mission Accomplished: Syria, the Anti-War Movement, and the Spirit of Internationalism. Welcome to Background Briefing, Danny Postel.
Thanks so much, Ian. Good to be here.
And I take it that your critique is that while that the peace movement is celebrating the fact that that they feel in many ways that they're responsible for Obama backing down from bombing Syria. At the same time, they're turning a blind eye to the ongoing Holocaust, where over 100,000 people have died and one-third of the population is displaced.
Yeah, that's essentially what I argue, Ian. It's not the case for the entire peace movement, just to be clear. But what I did in the piece that you mentioned is I plucked some of the more some of the things that have been said in the last few weeks that I found particularly troubling, this kind of spirit of triumphalism and this sense that the thwarting of the Obama administration's proposed attack on Syria is some sort of major victory. Now, I should say that I say this in the piece, I opposed U.S. intervention in Syria in the form that Obama had articulated it, as a strike to punish the Assad regime for the use of chemical weapons. I opposed it for several reasons. So it's not as if I'm on some mountaintop criticizing the peace movement from a totally different position. I'm actually very much a peace activist myself. I've been involved in anti-war work going back a few decades now to the early 1980s. But what troubles me and some others, particularly Syrians, as I point out in the piece, is that for many sectors of the U.S. peace movement, it's as if the entire issue were to do with whether the U.S. intervenes or not. And we're 2.5 years into the worst humanitarian catastrophe and mass slaughter of the 21st century. 100,000 people, more than 100,000 people are dead, with no end in sight. And in fact, the killing has gone up since the chemical weapons incident that this whole question of intervention revolved around. So on the one hand, you have the U.S. peace movement celebrating this victory that we've turned back another U.S. war in the Middle East. And one can debate, by the way, whether the peace movement was really so instrumental in thwarting that attack. I think that's an exaggeration. The fact is, it was Republican opposition to Obama's proposed plan of attack that was much more critical in the end. But that aside, just this spirit of triumphalism and jubilation about the fact that the U.S. is not attacking Syria, even though I agree that a U.S. attack on Syria would not have been good, what troubles me is this idea that the conversation, the issue is has been resolved. We can just celebrate now because the U.S. isn't attacking Syria. Well, you know, for me, that's not at all where the issue ends. The issue very much remains a perplexing, horrifying problem that those of us who care about human suffering in what I call the spirit of internationalism and solidarity really need to think long and hard about.
So, Danny Postel, how do you explain then, or what is your explanation for why so many American liberals and progressives were so excited about those kids in Tahrir Square taking on the dictator Mubarak, and yet they're not in any way engaged or they're completely turning their backs on these young Syrians who are trying to get rid of their dictator?
Well, I think there are two different issues at stake there that help explain that, Ian. One is that In the case of Ben Ali in Tunisia and Mubarak in Egypt, you had leaders who were U.S. allies. The United States supported both of these, particularly Mubarak, under whom Egypt was the second largest recipient of U.S. aid in the world. And so to see U.S. allies who are dictators toppled is very welcome from a progressive anti-imperialist point of view. Assad, although there are very few people on the left who admire Assad, there are some. Ramsey Clark, former U.S. Attorney General, and former U.S. Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney have just made a love fest tour of Syria praising the Assad regime. And there are those on the ultra-left who celebrate Assad. Most leftists do not celebrate Assad, but somehow felt more ambivalent about this because there's some sense in which Assad's Syria is part of this so-called axis of resistance against the U.S. and Israel, and Assad is not a U.S. ally, and so the enthusiasm for toppling him was, I think, less pronounced. And the second issue, of course, is the issue of violence. The Tunisian and Egyptian uprisings were largely nonviolent. Very little blood was shed in those two cases. So it's much easier to support and get excited about nonviolent social movements from below. Now, let's remember that in the first 8-9 months of the Syrian uprising, it was entirely nonviolent and largely, I would say, secular democratic in spirit. Now there's been a turn. Since about 9 months into the uprising, there was a turn to violence. The rebellion armed itself, understandably, in my view. And then, of course, there's been the introduction of these foreign jihadi fighters and groups affiliated with al-Qaeda and the like, Salafi extremists. And so that's turned a lot of people off as well. So there are these reasons, but I think it's important to remember that the movement began as a nonviolent movement with broadly democratic aims. Whether the rebels were religious or secular themselves, the aims, the stated political goals of the rebellion were broadly democratic and secular.
Again, I'm speaking with Danny Pastel, who's an associate director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Denver. His books include Reading Legitimate Crisis in Tehran, Iran, The Future of Liberation, and The People Reloaded, The Green Movement and the Struggle for Iran's Future. He blogs for Truthout, Critical Inquiry, and The Huffington Post. And his new book, co-edited with Nader Hashemi, is The Syria Dilemma. He has an article at The Huffington Post, Mission Accomplished, Syria, the Anti-War Movement, and the Spirit of Internationalism. So one of the problems that I see, Danny Pastel, is that ever since the end of the Cold War, all of the U.S. interventions have had their problems, shall we say, to put it mildly. The first one began under George H.W. Bush in Panama, right, where we don't know what the collateral damage is, but we know that they just went after one guy, one drug-dealing dictator. But how many people were killed is still to this day a bit cloudy. Then we went after Saddam, another dictator, and the collateral damage done to his country and to his people was colossal. In the first case, it was terrible. Second time around, when Bush invaded, it was catastrophic, and it still goes on to this day. We went after another dictator, Milosevic, and the collateral damage there is, again, difficult to ascertain. There's something fundamentally dysfunctional about this global system of justice, where you have to get rid of these terrible tyrants who are punishing their own people. And the only crime, the only sin that these people in these countries have is they live under a dictatorship. So we don't free them. Unfortunately, a lot of them get killed. And furthermore, the only mechanism that exists is the International Criminal Court, and we haven't even signed on to that.
That's right. Well, these are all absolutely good points, Ian. I am not a proponent of U.S. intervention. I've spent a good deal of my adult life opposing U.S. interventions, including the ones you mentioned in Panama, the Persian Gulf War in 1991, and many others. In the 1980s, I was an activist against U.S. intervention and proxy wars in Central America. I think in the 1990s, there was something of a paradigm shift with the emergence of the so-called humanitarian intervention paradigm, and there were profound debates about this on the left, particularly as this concept of humanitarian intervention applied to cases like Bosnia and Kosovo. But I think it's important to remember that there were actually some interventions in the 1990s that were not so horrible. The invasion of Haiti in 1994 that, strangely enough, involved the U.S. Marines toppling a fascist military junta and restoring the democratically elected socialist priest President Aristide of Haiti. That was a very limited intervention, to be sure, but it was a strange case for those of us who had been opposing interventions all of our lives to have this happen. And then, of course, you had Rwanda, where there was not an intervention, but arguably should have been one. You had East Timor a little bit later in 2001, where the Australians intervened. The rubber really hit the road in the case of Kosovo, where, as you say, there was a lot of collateral damage, and I actually spent 2 years editing a book about the Kosovo debate on the left. The bottom line for me, Ian, is that the Kosovo intervention was very complicated. It was murky, but at the end of the day, I would say that it did more good than harm. It did do harm, but it did more good than harm. For me, this one of the most powerful things I read about Kosovo was written by Richard Falk, the longtime peace activist and human rights scholar who went to Kosovo as part of the International Commission of Inquiry on Kosovo. He had opposed the intervention before he went on the usual anti-interventionist grounds. He went there, he talked to Kosovar Albanians, he talked to people on the ground, and he discovered that although there was a brief humanitarian crisis when the NATO bombing began in the spring of 1999, about 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks later, almost all of the Albanians who had fled Kosovo over the borders into Albania and Macedonia had returned. And had returned and were glad that the intervention had taken place and that life in Kosovo had actually been improved by this intervention. So, to make a long story short, I take each case on its own merits, on a case-by-case basis, and I think Syria is an enormously complicated case, which is why the book that Nader Hashemi and I have just edited is titled The Syria Dilemma.
Right.
Many different views presented in the book.
Well, just in the last minute, Danny Postel, at this moment, the International Criminal Court have indicted the head of Sudan. There's been riots in Sudan, in Darfur, and mostly in the actual capital, Khartoum, against this guy. He's been killing his own people. The UN Security Council brought up put forth a motion to condemn him. The Russians vetoed it. So this is a pattern that's going on, and yet so many people on the left basically support this new internationalism, which the Chinese and the Russians are pushing, largely because the Chinese want a free hand to suppress the Tibetans, and the Russians want a free hand to suppress the Chechens. So why are we buying into that kind of cynicism?
Well, as you say, I think you described this international system as dysfunctional, Ian, and I think that's right. I think that for most people on the left, there's one issue at the end of the day that matters more than any other issue, and that's the issue of opposing U.S. imperialism, opposing U.S. militarism. That's something that I sympathize with deeply, but I fear that it has created a kind of tunnel vision amongst progressive activists in which everything else becomes obscure. You cannot see the wider spectrum of issues. I think in a case like Syria, this is particularly blinding because the U.S. has not intervened in Syria. For 2.5 years, you have this humanitarian catastrophe with no end in sight. The U.S. threatened to intervene. The peace movement got very mobilized, very active, and has had a lot to say about the question of U.S. intervention, but has virtually nothing of value or relevance to say about the actual civil war in Syria, which has seen the deaths of over 100,000 people.
And well, Danny, I'm afraid
this points to a blind spot in leftist thinking.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Danny Postel, who's an associate director of the Center for Middle East Studies at the University of Denver. His books include Reading Legitimation Crisis in Tehran, Iran, and the Future of Liberation and the People Reloaded, the Green Movement and the Struggle for Iran's Future. He blogs for Truth Out, Critical Inquiry, and the Huffington Post, and his new book, co-edited with Nada Hashemi, is The Syria Dilemma. He has an article at the Huffington Post, Mission Accomplished, Syria, the Anti-War Movement, and the Spirit of Internationalism. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.